Welcome to Peak Health, a radio show dedicated to empowering you to take back control of your health so that you can have the freedom to live the life that you want. I'm Lisa Morse, naturopathic physician on the island at Fern Cove Natural Medicine. I'm dedicated to helping you uncover the root cause of your symptoms so that you can get back on the road to feeling well again.
And I'm Claire Denise, certified health and wellness coach and a personal trainer. Our show is going to bring you information to help you take charge of your health. We're going to cover topics like IBS, heartburn, thyroid disorders, autoimmune diseases, osteoporosis, nutrition, and lots more. Hi. Hey, Lisa.
Hi, Claire.
How's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
You know, I'm good. I'm good. I'm happy to be here and to learn more about something that I don't know very much about today.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited. So we're continuing our series on physical medicine. And today's guest is Gail Rosewood. She is a rolfer on the island. And we're so grateful that she's come in to talk to us, to educate us and our listeners. So welcome, Gail.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Of course.
I just really know so little about rolfing, except that it's sort of like really deep massage. Is that correct, Gail?
I would say that it got stuck with that reputation, and I would like a chance to fine-tune that.
All today. Right.
I'm so excited that you're going to do that.
Okay.
You like that. Oh. Yeah, so the first question I wanted to ask you, Gail, is how did you become a rolfer?
Yes, yeah. I stumbled into it, almost like I stumbled onto this island.
Okay.
I had dropped out of college. A lot of people did that back in the 60s because I didn't want any of the choices that were being offered to me.
Oh, yeah.
History, English, it was no. And I had a feeling for something I wanted, but it wasn't a category in the college. And I happened through serendipity and good fortune to meet at the founder of Esalen Institute in Big Sur. And this was a very experimental human potential growth center, one of the first of its kind that was coming forward in the 60s. So I asked him if I could get a summer job. And he said yes, after he was visiting my parents and feeling mellow. I showed up for my summer job. And I knew I had found my college. So there was all kinds of therapies being experimented with. They were kind of new on the scene. Gestalt therapy, Virginia Satir, as well as somatic things, Charlotte Silver's breathing work. There were encounter groups going on. There was a kind of Wild West idea of human potential and how to bring relatively normal, functional people into a sense of evolution in their life. So this was all going on, and all of it was very interesting to me. And in the course of that, the founder of Rolfing, Ida Rolf, was visiting Esalen a lot and finding an audience for her work. She was 72. I was 20. I signed up to be a model for somebody she was mentoring, and I had an immediate sense of being very intrigued with what she was seeing and what she was doing. Not that I understood what she was saying to the guy, but I also was being transformed in my body, having experiences of finding myself, and I was like, how is she seeing what she's seeing? Because she would talk as if she had X-ray vision. And she'd be looking at my front and talking about my spine. And I was like, how does she see that? I didn't think at the time I wanted to be a rolfer, but I wanted to be able to see like that. Because I had a sense that I was going towards some somatic skill. So I had little angels sitting on my shoulders. I told her I didn't think I wanted to be a rolfer, but I wanted to learn how to see and could I audit her class. I'm quite sure if I had asked her to train, she would have said, why don't you go grow up for about 5 years?
Wow.
Because I looked like a little teeny bopper and come back later. But she had no problem with me sitting in her class. And I didn't know that the first phase of becoming a Rolfer was to learn how to see.
Hmm. Oh, so you were taking the first step.
I was.
And didn't know.
So nice. I took her class, became really fascinated by her thought process, her vision. She was extremely intelligent. I felt more intelligent for sitting in the room with her, and I started to be able to see the changes that were happening for people. And it was very exciting to me, and it was a very hopeful vision.
Yeah.
And so by the end of the class, I wanted to become a Rolfer. And at first, she said no. And then a couple of months later, I got a call from her secretary, and the secretary asked if I would be willing to come over and clean Ida Rolf's refrigerator.
Really?
This is how badly do you want this?
Yes. So I was like, well, okay. So I went over and cleaned her refrigerator, and then she and her secretary were sitting down for lunch and asked me to join them. And Ida Rolf asked me a lot of questions about myself. And at the end of lunch, she said, so do you still want to be a Rolfer? I said, yes, I do. So that's how I went into my training.
Nice.
My career, I've been at my career now for 50 years.
Wow.
And my whole training cost $1,000.
Wow. But your experience is invaluable.
So it's kept me intrigued for 50 years.
Wow, so you were talking about the changes that you were seeing that because you became able to see.
Yes.
And what kinds of changes did you see?
Well, basically, what I thought was so mysterious is not all that mysterious once you learn the landmarks to track, to look at. And what we're looking at is how the body deals with gravity and... I'm going to slide a little into theory here to explain that question. So, we're born fairly in good order, and then we start to fall off our bicycle and sprain our ankle and have a surgery here and a pregnancy there and what the things that go on in life, a car accident. Each one of these is something that'll tend to knock you off center. And, then there's issues of scar tissue and sort of the leftovers, which when you're young, you just get up on your feet and you keep going. But in general, if you think of building blocks, of stacking blocks, when you are in a really stable, strong place, the blocks are directly on top of each other. But when a block gets knocked off to the left, to stay upright in gravity, some other part of the body is going to slide off to the right. So there's a balancing act going on. And as we age, and it's completely typical, people develop preferences for rotations and side bends and favoring one leg over the other. And this kind of becomes the norm for that body. So the general theory of Rolfing is that there is a way to interact with connective tissue in the body, to feed the body good information, and to help lengthen out places that have become chronically overworked or shortened in order to hold the body stable. And then gravity does the rest. So Ida Rolf said, gravity is the therapist. As the person stands up again, they notice that they were tilted right, whereas before that was the habitual pattern. So they start to self-correct from there. So I might go around with more theory, but I'll just stop there in answer to your question. So,
okay. I guess I'm curious then, how did Rolfing become associated with just like, I think what I've heard is that it's very deep tissue that's painful.
Right. So this, at the time, and I'm talking 50 years ago, Ida Rolf was really a visionary, I would say. She had something to say that wasn't in the culture at that time. What she was saying was that it was possible to change form and function through an educated touch. The people at that time around her hadn't grown up with this idea. They hadn't had any training. And it's something that our culture has caught up with now. So this is not a radical idea anymore, that the right pressure, the right pacing will affect different systems in the body. So at this point, we have a proliferation of all manner of hands-on modalities that address the lymph system, the nervous system, the visceral system, the cranial sacral system. There's a modality for almost every system in the body at this point. But 50 years ago, this was considered a far-reaching idea. And so she was saying, you can change form and function with touch. And the people around her were going, no. Well, maybe she can. But it must be very difficult. So in the beginning here, these were not trained massage therapists. These weren't people who had had much education at all about hands-on body work. And her work came in at a time in the exploration at Esalen that was associated with very radical breakthrough therapies, primal scream, very dramatic sort of, you know, push the problem out. And so it, I would say that it was a combination of lack of sophistication as people were learning how to do this, and lack of training in the moment about how to use your body well when you're working. So we didn't have that in the beginning, and people were overworking in the beginning. So and so it kind of got that reputation of being something that was not the spa massage, and it was being advertised. This is deeper. This does something different.
But
it's unfortunate that the issue of pain keeps following it around. And there may be practitioners out there that keep that reputation going. But I just have to say that is not something my clients ever complain about, and I make sure of that. Because when I work with people, it's a cooperative venture, and I'm seeking to find the pacing and the pressure that is of interest to them and is not causing them to tense up. So
I'm curious, who might decide to come to you for, do you do one session? Do you buy a series of sessions?
Right. The original series was designed, and I still hold to this, to be 10 sessions. I'm not saying that people have to buy 10 sessions or commit to it. So people are perfectly free to actually just come and talk to me for half an hour or to try a session. The sense of the 10 series is that we are working holistically with the body to take it from its habitual pattern to a new place that is integrated and really comfortable. And in the course of the 10 series, every segment of the body gets very specific attention while wrapping it into the whole pattern of the body. So the 10 series gives us the time so that the feet get good attention, the knees get good attention, the hips get good attention. It's not that we work like that linearly, but so that every part of the body is being invited into a new place. The people that come, there's a huge variety of people that come. I tend to get people who are just knowing that they used to feel better, that they used to have more stamina, that that they used to be pain-free. So I often get people who have kind of nagging, you know, the neck that goes out or a hip that keeps being tight. So I tend to get more people who are, I would say, 40 and older. It's kind of a time of life when people are feeling the slings and arrows of time. Mm-hmm. But I also work on children. So I have parents who bring their children because a little attention early on can do a lot with tendencies that might have been there at birth, or a child can be complaining also about trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So I've worked with probably age 4 to 94, something like that.
Pretty broad range.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Great. So you talked about Ida Rolf.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell me just a little bit more about the history of it?
That would be great. Yeah. So she was a biochemist. She was a very private person. So she didn't talk exactly about her linear process of coming into this.
Mm-hmm.
But she had two sons, and one of them complained of aches and pains. And she was a scientist. She would take that son to doctors, and the doctors would say there was nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But she would watch her two sons out playing around, running around, and she could see that the son that was complaining just didn't look as together in movement as the other son. You know, the knees were going this way and that, and he was kind of in his own way and tripping over his own feet. So her scientific mind said, what am I seeing here that makes this child look more together and this one look more awkward? And so she started to make that observation. She was practicing yoga at the time, which in her day and age would have been already very radical.
Mm-hmm.
And she decided to help the son with the aches and pains do some yoga. And she started to notice places where he was very tight. And then she started to massage him while he was in yoga poses. And I think she made the discovery that connective tissue, that the body could become more elastic with the right kind of massage.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that started it. And then it was the time during the Depression, I believe, when you lived in rural areas, and if somebody heard that there was somebody that could help, they might show up on your doorstep. Mm-hmm. And so she had people showing up on her doorstep saying, I heard you help so-and-so. Can you help me? And she just would always say, well, come on in, let's see.
Mm-hmm.
And
literally.
So, literally, yeah. And she'd take out an anatomy book, and she'd find that something was out of place, and she'd find that she could put it back in place. And so she said the work happened for 40 years. The theory came after that.
Wow.
So
interesting.
She was working piecemeal, and then people would come back and say, well, you made my knee feel better, but now my back doesn't feel so great. So she started to say, all right, this is a whole system, and all the parts need to come into harmony to take it to a new, a greater place of harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the 10 series is about. This was the other part where I felt like she was, I know, she was way ahead of her time. She said to us back in the early 70s, we're working with connective tissue. Connective tissue is an intelligent system in the body. It ends up in the bucket at the end of the cadaver table, like the throwaway wrapping. Science has no interest in it. I want you to say you're working with connective tissue because science will catch up. And so, in fact, that's what's happened in the last 10 years. And what they've found is that connective tissue is highly innervated with proprioceptive nerves. So it's an organ of shape. It tells you, where am I in space? And so her theory was that we were connecting the connective tissue. We were waking it up and bringing it into an awareness as a whole system.
Mm-hmm.
And that she was saying that's why gravity's the therapist, because when the body can feel what's accurate in space, it will self-correct if it's out of balance. So this was now science is finding that this makes sense. At that time, it was not particularly something right. that people were thinking about.
Right. Okay.
And so from there, I'll just say, and from there have come deep tissue massage and myofascial release and a lot of offshoots that are saying they're working with connective tissue. But she was really the origin, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm. Did she manage to help her son?
She did.
Yeah?
Yes. Yes, I met him years later. Yeah.
Nice. Interesting.
Yeah.
I have to pause here for a minute to say you're listening to Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSH. And this is Peak Health, and I'm Dr. Lisa Morse, and here with my co-host, Claire Denice, who's a personal trainer and health coach, and we are talking to Gail Rosewood about Rolfing. It's very interesting. I wanted to ask, actually, just if you could tell our listeners about what they would experience if they would come to see you. What is a treatment like?
Sure. Yeah. Good question. Mm-hmm. We usually start with me talking to them about what motivated them in the first place to seek this. They are often talking about symptoms of right. different sorts, or sometimes not, just they want enhanced performance. But so we talk about why they're there. And then I often will have them stand up and I will talk to them about the pattern that I see in their body, posture patterns and preferences for favoring or rotating or things like that. I will mention if it looks like the curves of the spine aren't in harmony with each other or if the legs are different from each other. And some of this people are very aware of, and some of it is something that they aren't so aware of because how we stand every day is just how we feel like ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So as I talk about that, it's not a critique, it's educational. Mm. It's an education in this is what your body has chosen. There's the ability to make new choices and different choices, but it takes contrast and awareness to be able to do that. So some of the change that happens in the session is because the person becomes aware of certain posture patterns that have been working against their well-being. Mm. And I'm working with them about how to have more awareness of that and how to make not this is the right way to sit and this is the wrong
right.
way to sit, but here's the whole spectrum of choice and see which one feels better to you. See where you feel better supported. See where your breathing is more open. See where you're not in pain.
Mm-hmm.
So part of it's educational. And then I explain the process of the 10 series and what we're doing with that. And then we get down to work. So getting down to work means that they're lying on a massage table. They're in their underwear. And I am in a cooperative conversation often with people. This doesn't mean that we're talking all the time, but I am often sharing things that I'm noticing. Like I can read with my fingers injured places in the body. So I might say, okay, here's something that is left over from your past. And sometimes people remember that and sometimes not. And so I'm sort of bringing them into awareness with areas that I am focusing on. There's a lot of times when we're in silence as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there's times when people are sharing with me what they're experiencing. So we work that way. And then at the end of the session, often there's a time when they're standing up and I'm asking them what they're noticing. And I'm sometimes sharing what I'm noticing. And I guess that's it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about people that have had, hip replacements or joint replacements of any kind, I guess, or
yeah.
other sort of life-altering surgeries and things like that. Can you still work with them, even if they've had a fusion or a whatever?
Oh, absolutely. Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, more and more, I'm working with people mm-hmm. who are recovering from joint replacements. So, yeah. And it's very crucial because you get one joint replaced, but it changes the balance of the body. And it's very common that next down the line, the next joint, you know, whether it's the other hip or the next knee or something, starts to be a problem next. So coming back to balance is really important.
Yeah. That's what I was just going to say. They probably, people who've had joint replacements probably need your work.
Yeah.
Maybe more so than others. So I had a question about, you know, what kind of conditions do you treat or what kind of, mm-hmm. And I know you talked earlier about just like the people that you see, you know, usually are just not feeling right. They're not feeling the same. They're not having the energy or they're having mm-hmm. pains and stuff. Is there
anything particularly that you work with a lot or?
It's often joint problems, neck problems, back problems.
Okay.
I work with scoliosis. I work with congenital things at times that people are managing. One of the things I like about my profession is that people might have had fairly dire diagnoses, medical diagnoses, and I am not... I'm leaving the door open that the body can always get better.
Mm-hmm.
So there are times when people say, oh, I'm always going to be in pain because I was told I have arthritis. And then they find that they don't have to be in pain. They might still have the arthritis, but it's just millimeters of space that they were looking for. Mm-hmm. The difference between being in pain or not being in pain. So to just get a little bit of space back, a little bit of lubrication into a disc or a joint can make a world of difference. And I like the feeling of that there's always hope.
Yes, I like that too. Because I just find that as health practitioners, what we say can have a huge impact on people. And so whereas somebody can hear from the doctor that, you know, I'm going to have this pain, we can say, not necessarily.
Yeah.
You know, let's work on that.
Yeah.
Whatever it might be. So
yes. That's great. I often come up, I sort of work with the client. What can they do? How can they take care of themselves
mm-hmm.
In between sessions so that they become proactive in staying feeling good?
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing both of you say is that, you know, perspective or attitude or a belief can play a fairly significant role in whether they feel better or get relief or results from whatever treatment they've sought.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And the fact that they can, in an hour's time, stand up and go, wow, I do feel better,
mm-hmm.
is already a good step forward.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like it.
Really interesting.
It is.
Yeah.
I
learned a lot.
So we have just a couple more minutes left. And so I just wanted to ask you, Gail, if there's anything that you want to add here at the end or want our listeners to know.
I'd like to know, how would they get in touch with you?
Oh, yeah. Well,
that's sure. Yeah. So website is Gail, G-A-E-L, rosewood@gmail.com. I have a web page, gailrosewood.com. You can read about Rolfing and other things that I teach on that web page. And then I have a phone number. Do people usually do that? Yes. Okay. 206-567-0018.
Oh, easy to remember.
Mm-hmm.
And do you do it out of your home, or do you have an office somewhere around town? Or
I have a home office. Yeah, I have a studio space.
Nice.
Just to the side of my home. I love it.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think we will wrap it up for today. And we appreciate you coming on and taking time out of your day to talk with us.
I had one really quick, differentiating between some of those modalities that you mentioned. Do they overlap a little bit, like Rolfing and craniosacral
and
myofascial release and so forth?
They intersect with each other in very positive ways. Mm-hmm. The osteopathic work or craniosacral I mean, this is very glib, but what I say is those modalities work on the stuffing and I work on the scaffolding. Mm. But they really go hand in hand. So those modalities, nerve sheath release works. There's a lot of complementary things. Rolfing can help a chiropractic treatment stay more stable because we get to feet and places that knees and places that the spine needs for that kind of support. So they do help each other.
Oh, thank you for answering that.
Yeah.
That was actually on my mind, Claire, so I'm glad you asked that. Okay. The myofascial.
I'm just fascinated by the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, thanks, Lisa.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you again, Gail.
Thank you.
Until next time, take care, everybody.